Welcome to Let's Finally Watch This, a podcast for casual movie fans who have always meant to watch classic movies. My name is Nick Hayden.
And my name is Timothy Deal.
And we are your hosts here in 1984.
That's right. Before we go on, Nick, real quick, I want to note we neglected last episode to note a milestone.
What is that?
That was our 30th episode of Let's Finally Watch This, and now we're on episode 31.
I know, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, there's a little podcast or a little spinoff is growing day by day.
It was just an idea we had because we liked... Well, we had movies we thought would be fun to watch together, and
we want to do something a little different than what we did with Weekly Hijack, but it's been fun.
Yeah.
But yes,
we're... And 30 movies that I hadn't seen. Well, almost 30. Some of them I'd seen, but most of them I had not.
Right. But now we are back in the 80s, Nick.
Yes, this is our territory.
That's right. We know our 80s.
I was 4 years old at this point. Three, really, until the end of the year.
Yeah, I was a little bitty baby. So, yes, I did not see this week's movie when it came out.
I did not either. But this week's movie is...
The Terminator.
Yes.
Wow, very dramatic. The Terminator.
The Terminator.
So you had not seen this movie.
I had not seen this movie. No. Like,
so I had seen this one back in my 20s, but...
I have never seen this.
So, okay, well, this will be a fun discussion.
I've seen some of the sequels, but not this one. So what is... Give us a rundown of blockbuster territory here in the 80s.
Well, you know, I've said in previous episodes, previous seasons, that there's often kind of a blending between different eras of film.
Yes.
Like where there was some new Hollywood stuff going on and maybe some blockbuster age stuff going on. That's not the case here anymore. All you have to do is look at the top 10 highest grossing films of 1984 and realize the blockbuster age is here.
Let's hear them.
So we start off with Beverly Hills Cop.
Okay, yep.
Ghostbusters.
Yep.
Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Yep.
Gremlins. The Karate Kid. Police Academy. Footloose. Romancing the Stone. Star Trek III. And Splash.
That is literally my entire childhood right there. Like Star Trek, Indiana Jones, you know, yeah, these are all things that they're like pure 80s. Like we're in the 80s. Right
yes.
Now.
Yeah. And that's just the top grossing one. Some other notable films that came out this year, The Neverending Story.
Oh, great film. Yep.
And the first of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies.
Okay. Which so is, I mean, yeah.
Not really our genre, but we're not.
But it was all in the air when I was growing up. Yep.
Yep. We've moved from the director-driven stuff to basically studios are now going for high-concept movies, things that like have a very, like, oh, here's a big idea that's going to hook the audience in and want to see, go on an adventure with us.
And a lot of these movies end up being made into video games. We're also growing this time.
I suppose that's true. That's true. We have also talked about how the 80s are a period of where a lot of new technologies coming out or really developing. And it's worthy of notes that this year, in particular, 1984, was the Supreme Court case decision, Sony Corp of America versus Universal City Studios, which basically where they ruled that manufacturers of home video devices, VCRs, could not be liable for infringement.
So now tape your TV.
Yeah, you can tape your TV, basically. And that provided basically a safe harbor for VCRs to just flourish. It became a boon for that. Of course, VCRs were already becoming pretty popular, but this really established, like, okay, no, we can continue
going. It's legal. We're going to keep growing. And then I assume then the industry has to be like, okay, well, there's VHS. We're going to have to make money off this thing.
That's right. And I think they had already, some had already begun, but, you know, this is like, all right, VHS, we're going to, and so like, open the floodgates. And by 1985, the year following this one, VHS sales, that market was raking in about as much as the box office was.
Nice. Wow.
So, which is saying something. I think 1985 was not as big of a box office year as this one obviously was, but nevertheless. So I think those are the main 80s stuff, but we can hone in a little bit more on 85, if I remember right.
84.
84, yes.
Don't jump ahead yet.
Right.
That's next season.
On February 15th of this year, Walt Disney Studios establishes Touchstone Pictures to release films with more mature subject matter than you would normally see. There's some good Touchstone movies as one of those like, oh, Disney's becoming more of a mega corp and not just a kid studio.
Yeah. Welcome to the 2020s.
Yep. Want to touch on Romancing the Stone real quick. Have you seen that one? Are you familiar with that?
I know we had it in our house. I can't remember if I watched it or not.
It's kind of an Indiana Jones-ish sort of thing. But I mention it because it's credited with propelling Michael Douglas, Kathleen Turner, and Danny DeVito into star status.
Okay.
As well as the director of that movie, Robert Zemeckis.
Okay, yes, Back to the Future.
Yes, right, because if that was his first box office success, it gave Universal Pictures confidence to allow him to direct Back to the Future, which would come out the following year.
Nice.
And we will talk more about Robert Zemeckis next episode.
Ah.
So, be looking forward to that. On April 6th of this year, according to Wikipedia, TriStar Pictures, a joint venture of Columbia Pictures, HBO, and CBS, releases its first film, Where the Boys Are 84, which I've never heard of, but
great premiere, guys.
But I know TriStar Pictures. That's the studio. Their logo has got the big Pegasus.
Yes, yes.
So you probably remember seeing that on VHS when we were growing up.
Exactly. Touchstone, remember?
yep. Notably, this year in July 1st, the Motion Picture Association of America instituted the PG-13 rating.
Thank you, Temple of Doom.
Yes.
Another Temple thing we've talked about.
Temple of Doom and Gremlins.
Yeah.
Which both came out this year, and specifically because of that.
Those are both connected to Spielberg, aren't they?
Yes, and I think Spielberg was one who suggested the whole PG-13 thing.
Yeah.
So, yes, that was a long-lasting...
Was the executive producer of Gremlins?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, you can tell, like, this is where I know my stuff a little more.
yeah. Ghostbusters becomes the biggest grossing comedy film of all time when it premieres on August 25th, but that record is broken by Beverly Hills Cop. That movie was released December of this year, but it would become... Its earnings would trail into 1985, so it would continue for a while. And that is also became the sixth highest grossing film in the U.S. at the time.
Wow.
The highest grossing comedy, as we just said, as well as the highest grossing R-rated film of all time. A record it would hold for 19 years, I think, until The Passion of the Christ.
That was my guess, yeah.
So
interesting. Huh.
Yes. I don't know much about Beverly Hills Cop. I know it's an Eddie Murphy movie.
Yeah. Movie stores, VHS stores, I remember seeing it. I don't think I ever watched it.
Yeah. At the Academy Awards, it was a big year for the movie Amadeus.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've seen Amadeus.
Yes, it won Best Film, Best Director for Milos Forman, and Best Actor for F. Murray Abraham. I think the actor who played Salieri.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Best Actress went to Sally Field for Places in the Heart, a movie I have seen in film school, I'm pretty sure, way back when. It's just interesting to think of Amadeus and The Terminator coming out in the same year. They don't look anything alike.
No.
I mean, there's just something about period pieces that are a bit more timeless.
They just last long. They're not as connected to the contemporary styles.
Yeah. The fashions, that kind of stuff. Film debuts is not a big deal this season, but when I was looking at this, wow, there's a lot here. This year saw the film debuts of Jennifer Connelly, Johnny Depp, Rupert Everett, Colin Firth, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Gilbert Gottfried, Seth Green, Val Kilmer, Tim Robbins, Ice-T, Jennifer Tilly, and Michelle Yeoh. So, big list. Yeah.
No kidding.
You can go check that out on 1984 in film on Wikipedia, if you like. This episode's other nominations, which we did not go with, we nominated Gremlins.
Yes.
Because I've actually never seen Gremlins.
I've seen it probably too early.
You saw it probably too early. Okay. But it's a big pop culture feature that I just need to get to someday. And our other nominee was This Is Spinal Tap.
Yes.
A mockumentary kind of popularized the style. I don't know if it's the first one. I haven't looked into that. First famous mockumentary, I would guess, but I have seen, and you really should see someday.
I really should see sometime. Yeah, I've seen, what's his name? Was that Rob Reiner?
Yeah, I think he directed it.
I saw Best of Show, which I think was another mockumentary with dogs, but that was later, not as well known.
Gotcha. Yeah, you should check out. I think there's some F-bombs. I think it's why it's rated R, if I remember right. But it's still worth watching, I would say. But The Terminator was just so iconic. I mean,
it's still having ripple effects nowadays.
That's true. It established the career of James Cameron. So, you know, there big you go. Deal. Speaking of...
Yeah, speaking of James Cameron.
Well, speaking of The Terminator.
Oh, The Terminator, yes.
Are we ready to...
Let's just do a summary here and get going.
Sure.
Yeah, straight to the point, just like Terminator.
So, man, if you don't know the plot of Terminator... Okay, I have to ask. Did you know the plot of Terminator before we started?
I knew the general plot, yeah. Just because, I mean, It's basically the plot of all the Terminator movies. I mean,
basically,
I mean,
true.
Not exactly, but you need to know this movie, the ideas of this movie to make the rest.
Yeah.
I think it's just seeped in the Skynet and the what the Terminators are and Sarah Connor and the time travel. I mean, I think it's just if you know anything about science fiction movies at all,
you've heard about it. Yeah. Yeah. So the basic idea is that Arnold Schwarzenegger stars as the Terminator, a T-800, although I guess they don't actually give his model number here. But anyway.
They don't? I thought they did.
I thought I heard somewhere that it might be in the second movie where they give the number.
Oh, okay. I thought I heard a number, but anyways.
You might have. Anyway, so yes, he is sent from the far-off distance future of 2029.
Yes.
To the year 1984 to kill Sarah Connor. She doesn't know why, but there is another time traveler from the future that has come to protect her. That is Kyle Reese. And he tells her that she is going to raise a child named John Connor, who will basically be the hero of the freedom fighters in the future that has been ravaged by AI, mm-hmm. basically.
Basically.
Yeah, doesn't
sound
like...
Robots, mainly, but...
Doesn't sound like our actual future at all.
No, not at all.
Okay, well, we don't actually have robots with laser guns or...
Not yet.
Yeah, there hasn't been a nuclear holocaust yet.
Yeah.
We're still working on that, but... But yeah,
do we want to be working on that, Tim?
Probably not. Okay. But, you know, I'm just saying.
Okay, know. Yeah.
But yeah, you do see a flash. The movie starts with a flash forward of the future to see, like, yeah, it's a post-apocalyptic landscape, yep. and lots of bad things going on. But anyway, like I said, Kyle Reese is trying to protect Sarah Connor from the Terminator who wants to kill her before she can give birth to a baby who she doesn't even know that, like, she's not even pregnant.
No, she's just running around like a waitress.
Yeah, basically. And that's really all you need to know going into this. Like, yep. the Terminator is this nonstop force of...
You don't even know that much going into it.
Yeah, no, that's true. I'm giving some secrets away, except, yeah. again, you probably already know all yeah. this. If you didn't, I'm sorry. But yes, there's lots of car chases and explosions. This is...
Him just killing random people.
Yeah, lots of people who he thinks... He has to literally go through a phone book. Apparently, the Terminators are programmed to know what a phone book is.
I know, I thought that was really impressive. Yeah, good job. They did the research.
Yeah, they did. I lost my train of thought. This is typically considered a sci-fi action, heavily inspired by horror. Some people would say it's more of a horror movie than an action, but I would say there's too many car chases and explosions and shootouts to not be an action movie.
That, yeah, I would agree. But it certainly has heavy elements of horror and how the Terminator acts.
Exactly. But this was, like I said, this basically really started James Cameron's career. It wasn't the first movie he had directed, but it was the first one he had a lot of control over.
And it went off really well.
And it was also very important for Arnold Schwarzenegger's career. Mm-hmm. Of course, he had had his breakout role 2 years before in Conan the Barbarian. But, you know, having a second hit movie shows you're not just a one-trick pony.
Especially in a completely different sort of...
Style. Yeah, we're going from a sword and sandal movie to
guns and car chases and stuff.
Tech noir.
Yeah, it kind of is.
It's not really noir, but they use that. There's a bar called Tech Noir. It's like, okay, I see what you're doing.
So before we jump in, obviously we know it's had impact since. I mean, people talk about AI, they talk about Skynet and all this, you know.
Mm. Skynet being the company that went online and then basically started the nuclear holocaust.
But are there other things you want to point out as far as impact with direct impacts besides just having entered the cultural memory?
It's always fun to look at some of the attention these things get. You may notice it wasn't included on the top grossing movies of the year. But it was very commercially successful.
Yeah.
It made like 70-some million dollars on a $6 million budget.
That's not bad.
Yeah, not bad at all. Not bad at all. And of course, notoriety-wise, it did win, let me see, 3 Saturn Awards for Best Science Fiction Film, Best Makeup, and Best Writing. It is on a couple American Film Institute lists. It was ranked number 42 on the 100 Thrills.
Mm-hmm.
On the 100 Heroes and Villains, again, there was 50 of each. The Terminator was selected as number 22,
nice.
The greatest villain. Notably, the Terminator from Terminator 2 would feature on the Heroes list,
yep.
which is kind of fun. He's on both lists, like, sort of. And then on the 100 Greatest Movie Quotes, naturally, this line,
I'll be back,
came in at number 37.
Yes.
Because everyone knows, I knew I'll be back, like, back when I was 6.
Yeah. Like, everyone said it.
Everyone said it.
And this is such an interesting context, because it's like...
Only Arnold can make such a simple line so iconic with that accent of his. That It's just funny. Like, you don't think about him having, like, this is a Terminator with an Austrian accent. What's that all about? It just makes him sound more robotic.
It does. In some weird way. He does a really good job of being robotic.
He does. Anyway, some other lists that it's on. Total Film in 2005 named it as the 72nd best film ever made.
That's wow.
On top 100 lists, even. In 2008, Empire Magazine selected it as one of the 500 greatest movies of all time. Okay, that's not very specific. The T-800, the Terminator, was placed also on an Empire list of the 100 greatest movie characters at number 14. It has been entered into the National Film Registry in 2008 for being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. The movie has to be around for a certain period of time before they'll enter it. So that's why...
Well, you got to see if it's going to stick around or not.
Right, yeah. Basically. In 2010, the Independent Film and Television Alliance selected the film as one of the 30 most significant independent films of the last 30 years. I forgot it's considered an indie film of all things.
That's interesting. It has some elements of that.
Yeah, it's distributed by Orion. They were not like one of the big studios. So yeah. I guess that makes sense.
And I don't know if it influenced, but you can just see at least it touched into that sort of post-apocalyptic thing that science fiction is always, but it encapsulated a new way, and we'll talk more about that in the thing. But it reminded me of like the same sort of thing that Matrix did later.
Oh, you know, sure.
Machines take over, we need to save ourselves. It's kind of that, it was a really good example of that sort of like survival of mankind.
Yeah, well, and we've talked before about how, I mean, sci-fi movies were real big in the 80s, and 80s movies had this time of like a lot of new technology and like uncertainty about it and where it's going, and also kind of a longing for some traditional values.
So I think some of its longevity has to do with how it just tapped into that.
Yeah.
So I think that's you can't quantify that with like 55 out of 100, but I think it just hit a nerve somewhere.
Yeah, it encapsulated an idea and it captured the public imagination in a certain way. I remember the creators of Phineas and Ferb talked about how some of the creators of Shrek labeled donkeys as it was pop culture real estate at the time before Shrek came out.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, Perry the Platypus is going to be our pop culture real estate. And that no one's done a platypus thing yet. Yep. And the Terminator just like it captured that like the whole idea of a robot from the future coming back to kill you. I mean, it's a time travel story, like basically like, you know, let's kill Hitler.
Yeah.
But like, and this time it's like, oh, let's kill, you know, George Washington. Yep. Like the bad version of that.
Okay,
anyway.
We're starting to get into our discussion. So we probably jump into that. So I think that's everything.
I think that's all the facts.
So we're ready for our 12 minutes.
Okay. Let me get that on the clock.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is the Terminator. Your future is in its hands.
Yeah, we don't necessarily need to go into James Cameron's worldview for this one, I don't think. Okay, ready. 12 minutes starts now.
I think the most interesting thing watching is that early on, it just, not that it was bad, but it felt very much like a traditional 80s, almost B-movie sort of thing when I first started watching it. Uh-huh. I get the same sense when I go back and try to watch A New Hope with fresh eyes. Like, when you first start watching, like, this is B-movie material, this shouldn't work. And then you keep watching both A New Hope and Terminator, and it just does things right. It just sells it.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I watch it, the more I'm like, okay, now I understand why they took off. Early on, I'm just like, yeah, just like a weird Miss Science Theater setup.
It does feel kind of very I mean, partly because a lot of those Missies were doing
the same sort of thing.
They were like ripping off of Terminator.
Exactly.
I mean, Rotor is basically a Terminator clone.
How about Time Chasers?
There's probably some of that.
And it's really pretty smart in the way that it starts. It doesn't really explain anything.
Mm-hmm.
You have just the mystery. Who are these guys? And then you get an exposition eventually. But it takes about a half an hour to get to the exposition dump.
Just let me come. Listen and understand. That Terminator is out there. It can't be bargained with. It can't be reasoned with. It doesn't feel pity or remorse or fear. And it absolutely will not stop. Ever. Until you are dead.
You know, I was wondering, and I don't know this. I didn't listen to a commentary or really do a lot of deep dive in this movie this week. But I did wonder if, you know, there's that opening prologue with some text that kind of lays in some foundation about like the future and this war and they're going to send a Terminator back and all this stuff. I half wonder if that's like a later addition sort of thing. Like, I wonder if you could have started the movie with just the Schwarzenegger Terminator appearing and then not see any of the future stuff until Kyle Reese kind of has a flashback about that.
Nowadays, you probably could get away with that.
Yeah.
Back then, they're probably like, look, we need
some
grounding.
Yeah. Because otherwise, that flashback might feel like it came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
If you weren't ready for that sort of thing.
That sort of thing. And yeah, and it's real. I mean, it really is a very small movie in the sense that, like, there's basically three people.
Yeah.
And it's just a lot of just that tension of Schwarzenegger getting closer and closer and running away and then him getting close. And it's, in that way, it's like a horror movie.
Yeah.
And it works, but it works better than an action movie, horror movie. And I at the end of it, I was trying to figure out, okay, why does this work? I mean, partly they just do things well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think just the garment they put it in, just that the time travel story, is just compelling.
It is.
It just works really well. I feel like that backstory flavors the entire movie, even though you don't see a lot of it. I mean, mm-hmm. You see a little bit. You got a couple of the future scenes.
The sense of foreboding of, like, the world is about to, like, in the mirror within our lifetimes of mm-hmm. these characters, pretty much, it's about to all explode.
Yeah, and this just adds a whole different layer. It flavors everything in a way that I think makes the movie work in a way that if you didn't have that same backstory or not as compelling one, mm-hmm. it wouldn't work. Or I don't know, is it a backstory when it's from the future?
I was just wondering about that. But yeah, no, it's a time travel story that is very simple and easy to understand, and it's yeah. set up. I mean, we don't have to have Doctor Who levels of, like, wibbly wobbly timey wimeyness. No. Pop culture is probably not ready for that yet.
And straightforward works sometimes. I mean, we like complicated, but sometimes just straightforward. It's simple. It's three people, and you kind of learn to understand that. I mean, the one's a robot. He's not much to understand.
Uh-huh.
But that's kind of the point. But mm-hmm. Reese and Connor are, and they, you know, they have an interesting relationship with each other, and they're both kind of uncertain about who they are, what they're doing, and.
Mm-hmm.
A sort of vulnerableness to both of them in different ways.
Yeah, in very different ways. I mean, Sarah Connor starts off as this downtrodden waitress, basically, and what am I doing with my life sort of style. And Kyle Reese is very vulnerable from basically having gone through the horrors of war, essentially. Yeah. But at the same time, he's the more experienced with dealing with all this kind of stuff. But it's an interesting dynamic. They're learning to work with each other and...
You're talking about things that I haven't done yet in the past tense. It's driving me crazy. Are you sure you have the right person?
I'm sure.
Come on, do I look like the mother of the future? I mean, am I tough? Organized? I can't even balance my checkbook. Look, Reese, I didn't ask for this honor, and I don't want it. Any of it.
Plus, Kyle has this whole, like, history of her son and Sarah herself.
Yes,
that,
yes.
That he felt like he was interested in her before he even knew her.
Yeah.
Kind of stuff.
History and future.
Yeah.
Anyway, but, and I think it really pays, you could have made it more complicated or more dense, but I think it would have hurt it. It's like sometimes when we see sequels, like, take the original simplicity and add too many things, then you're like, it loses the charm. Like, there's something that really works in the setup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a magic sauce. I'm not sure exactly why it works, but it does.
Yeah. It has just enough, like, to not be like, oh, this is so boring. This is so basic. Like, I mean, the ideas of the time travel, the, like, having to protect the future, having, you're expecting this child is going to be a child of promise.
And then Reese has this personal connection to all of it. Helps.
Yeah.
You know, he's not some random soldier trying to protect something.
Yeah. So all of that elevates it, at least in my mind, above like what would be like a slasher movie.
Yes.
Of like chasing a girl around it.
Exactly.
The consequences all feel, the stakes all feel greater. Janelle commented afterwards that it was, you know, pretty dark movie. It's still like, even though it has happy moments, it is a little bittersweet and it has that sense of foreboding future. But I still feel that. And maybe this is because I've seen the second one, which has an even more hopeful ending. But I do feel like this movie, despite the post-apocalyptic setting and details and all that, still feels more hopeful than, say, Chinatown did.
Yeah. It feels more like, okay, bad things are coming, but we're going to make, you know, it does get kind of bleak at some points. Like early on, it gets, you know, there's a lot, he's killing lots of random people. Mm-hmm. And then her poor roommate.
Yeah.
Who's kind of a weird character who just really loves her 80s headphones. But yeah, I don't know. It didn't come off depressing at the end. I feel like, I mean, like, it ends, a storm's coming, but it,
Yeah.
I feel like Sarah Connor's grown. Mm-hmm. Reese has kind of found a certain amount of closure.
Mm-hmm.
So it ends more, it ends relatively hopeful, yeah.
And I think I was thinking about this because we've had our third R-rated movie in a row. And,
yes.
And I complain about A Fistful of Dollars. The violence felt a little empty, like talking as if the stakes didn't really mean anything. It's like, yeah, this is just for the thrills. At least that was one reviewer's interpretation. And I kind of led it to like, okay, why were we doing this?
Yeah.
And Chinatown was just nihilistic.
Yeah.
But this, I feel like, yes, it's violent, and in some ways it is kind of a teen 20-something sort of movie. It's like, yeah, don't worry about all the body count and all that.
I mean, there is a lot of action horror stuff that propels the story.
Right. But I feel the meaning behind what's going on elevates this, at least in terms of like worldview wise. And
yeah.
I mean, I'm being hypocritical in a sense. I mean, in some ways, this is actually the more explicit compared to the previous two.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, again, it is R-rated. There is a sex scene, which is related to the story, but I don't, we're Christians. We don't actually need to see them having sex. And there's one scene of Arnold the Terminator stitching himself up that's like a little like, okay, we were kind of looking
away.
I
don't need
screen
to see you pull your eyeball out. Yeah.
So it's weird because in some ways this is the more explicit one, but like I like it more. And it's a strange thing to say.
And it might be because it is a little bit, and not really insult, a little more popcorn-y. Like Chinatown's dead serious.
Yeah.
You know, Fistful of Dollars is, it's cinematic. That one's weird though, because like,
it feels like it's supposed to be popcorny, but it's also a little sleazy. I mean,
yeah, it's sleazy. That one's a little, yeah.
You can tell why Tarantino likes it a lot.
But this one felt like, yeah, lots of people are dying and stuff, but it's kind of to the, it's more, I guess, adventure? I mean, it's dark. It's R-rated. But,
yeah.
But
it's
not supposed to be taken quite as seriously.
Yeah, I don't think so.
It's not trying to say the world's going to be like this. It's basically saying, wouldn't this be an interesting idea?
Well, and the Terminator is such a different villain compared to the other villains. I mean, there's no morality to it. It's just this cold, logical,
which is
programming.
Part of what makes it so tense, because he doesn't care. He just keeps going.
Yeah. He's like a force of not nature.
But there's no moral, like, I mean, it's evil, but is it not? He's not evil necessarily, because he's just a machine.
Yeah.
He's doing evil things.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
Phased plasma rifle in the 40-watt range.
Hey, just what you see, pal.
Uzi 9mm.
You know your weapons, buddy. Any one of these is ideal for home defense. So, which will it be?
All.
I may close early today. There's a 15-day wait on the handguns, but the rifles you can take right now. You can't do that.
Wrong.
It's one of the strange quirks of this sort of thriller movie. Like, you're not rooting for the Terminator, just like you wouldn't root for Jaws or Frankenstein's Monster.
Or some natural disaster.
But part of the thrill of watching those movies is seeing the big scary thing coming at you.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of, maybe that's one reason why I'll Be Back became such a catchphrase, because like, oh yeah, oh, something bad's going to happen. Yep. And like, you don't want to see it, but part of you's like, oh, I kind of want to see what's going to happen.
It really is a thriller in the sense that like, it just tries to thrill you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, what's going to happen next? Who's going to, how are they going to escape? What's going on? And it just gets elevated by having a more interesting story, I think.
Yeah. And I have heard that the character of Sarah Connor is in some ways inspired by Ripley from Alien.
Yep.
Yeah. She's a kind of in Alien, Ripley is a tough, well, she has to become a tough survivor, basically. And that's what Sarah Connor is becoming. So you think you've seen Terminator 2?
Again, I've seen parts of it at least.
Parts of it, okay.
Yeah. I won't promise I've seen all of it.
Ironically, I think I saw the Terminator Universal ride attraction thing before I saw any Terminator movies. So
I think the first one
first.
I know I saw all of was 3.
Oh, really? Okay.
So, yeah. Was that in the 90s? Not 3?
It was.
Or late 90s?
It was like 2000. It might have been 2003.
Okay, well, I think that's the first one I remember seeing in the theater, all of it.
Okay. Yeah. I think I went through the Terminator movies when I was, first time I was living in an apartment by myself. And I think I got them from the library where I was working at the time, or through Netflix when you got DVDs.
Yep.
So it shows you how long ago that was. You're back in my day. We got Netflix in the mail. But yeah, good times. We still have like 25 seconds.
Okay, so should they have made more Terminators, or just left the mystery of...
They should have left it at, ended at Terminator 2.
Okay.
That's my opinion. I mean, I enjoy...
I get why you want to keep... There's a lot of stuff that would be interesting to explore, but you then you take away the mystique, and it's hard to do if you're not doing it right.
Yeah, yeah. Terminator Salvation wasn't as bad as some people say, but at the same time, I think Terminator 2 was the most hopeful ending, so that's why it should have been the last one.
Can you stop it?
I don't know. With these weapons, I don't know.
But okay, that's time. All right, we got into talking about other movies, but bottom line, what do we think about this one?
I think certainly if you like science fiction, and certainly if you're okay with the R, because, I mean, that's a big disclaimer, depending on who you are.
Yeah.
It certainly is an important pop culture icon.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoyable for what it is.
It is. I had warned my wife that this is going to be sort of a man bam, which is our family's like side version of a chick flick. It's like the man side of that. Lots of explosion. And she was like, yeah, okay, it was. But I wanted to at least see how the Terminator got killed.
Yeah.
Or how, you know,
he's always satisfying. He does get killed. You're like, yes.
And interestingly, he gets crushed after... I remember Nathan pointed out like the... opening scene of all the human skulls getting crushed underneath the tanks. I don't know. That is
nice.
Nice
parallelism.
Yeah, or
bookends.
When two things are the same, like flip,
like bookends.
Symmetry.
Ha! There we go.
I knew it was an S word.
Okay. Yes.
But anyway, yes, we had a lot of fun with this. But yeah, know what you're getting into if you want to try it out.
I guess that's it. So make sure you visit our website, derailtrainsofthought.com. Subscribe to Let's Finally Watch This. And also our podcasts are on a hiatus, Weekly Hijack and Derail Trains of Thought.
And you can read all about those on our website. But of course, those podcasts, including this one, are all available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And if you didn't know that this podcast that you're currently listening to is there, hi, who are you? How did you get this?
Thank you, Skynet. they're coming after us. Okay, anyways. So next time we'll be in 1994. And we'll be watching...
Forrest Gump,
which...
somehow I have never seen.
And yeah. I'm not... Okay, let's go watch it, I guess. Okay. I don't have great memories of it, but we'll see.
You don't sound that excited, but...
I remember thinking like, okay... But we'll see. Some people loved it back in the day. Well, a lot of people loved it back in the day.
And we will see if we do.
Yes.
And this day.
Yes, that day. Okay.
Anyway.
Tomorrow.
Get us out of here, Nick.
Anyways, this has been Nick.
And this is Tim.
Adios.
Bye-bye.
We'll be back.